There we go. What do you think about this little buddy? He's kind of cute, Wayne says. He kind of looks like something you'd like to reach out there and pet and maybe stroke his head a little bit and tickle him under his chin. He might even play fetch with you. Who knows? If you stuck your arm out and tried to pet this cute little critter, you'd probably draw back a nub. He looks harmless. He looks very cute, but he is, in fact, very vicious. I don't know if you know what this is. Many of you probably do, but this is a Tasmanian devil. And he's got a kind of a large head and a large neck for his body, and that's to generate a very, very strong bite, stronger than any other mammal for his size. So that little thing right there bites harder than any other mammal for his size. Now, I think about a bulldog, and where's the Metcalfs? They get on to me because I'm not crazy about bulldogs, and they've got one. They've got a good one, I think. But I think about a bulldog, and I've seen people actually have a bulldog clamped down on a stick and be able to pick that thing up off the ground. You know, and you think about how they lock those jaws, and they've got a very powerful bite, and it can be very dangerous if they want to be. And a bulldog's got nothing on this little critter right here. I mean, he is very vicious. I want to think about Satan a little bit this morning, a subject we don't like to talk about and don't like to think about. But Satan is kind of like this in a sense. When we think about Satan, we think about our enemy and our adversary. We think about something that is vicious. And that stands to reason because the way that he is described and because of his destructive nature, we would think about something that is ugly, that is vicious, that is hideous. But that's not at all what Satan is like. Satan can come in the form of many, many different things. He can be cute and cuddly. He can be something that is absolutely beautiful and breathtaking. He can be something that is very fun and very amusing. And he can just be so many different things. So let's this morning think about that and think about ways that we can battle Satan in our lives. Look at how he's described in this particular scripture here. Ephesians 6 verse 11, "Put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil." Now, I've got that word wiles underlined because wiles actually means that it means to calculate and to be precise. And so you think about that for a minute. It's to be, in a sense, crafty and sneaky. And when you think about Satan, certainly that's how he is. Satan can take something that is very innocent, something that is even very holy, like the Word of God, and can twist that around and actually use it against us. We saw him, we read about his attempt to do that with Jesus, and we see today that he does that in churches. He can take the Word of God and twist that around and use it against us. And so he has many wiles, if you will. It's to be methodical and to calculate. Now this guy right here, does he look cute and cuddly? Not at all. Sometimes we think that Satan would approach us in a very vicious way. We think of Satan as being something that is going to look dangerous and would cause us a threat, but not necessarily. This guy right here, the way he hunts is he stalks his prey. As this picture shows right here, he gets down in his environment and he adapts and he kind of blends in, and he doesn't go on long chases. He won't chase his prey for a long distance. What he does is he stalks down, he gets low, and he stalks his prey. And his prey will never even know that he's around in most cases, never even have a clue. And what he does is, thinking about that word wiles, what he does is he will calculate, because that's the way God made him. He will calculate the precise time to make his attack. When his prey is the most vulnerable, that's when he's going to make his attack. And so when he makes his attack, he doesn't make a gentle attack. He doesn't attack from just anywhere, but he goes for the death kill. He goes for the jugular, for the throat right away. In any case, that's where he's going to be attacking. You know, in 1 Peter chapter 5, the passage that was read a minute ago, that's exactly how Satan is with us. He's described to us as a lion. And Satan does that same thing to us. He stalks us, in a sense. Sometimes we don't even realize that he is around, and he stalks us, and he's waiting for that time to make his attack. He makes his calculations. He blends in with the environment, and we don't even realize that he's there. and he's waiting for that exact time. And that exact time is going to be different with every one of us. It might be a time of great temptation in our life. It might be a time of distress, of maybe a death or maybe some sadness. It might be a time of depression when maybe we are feeling a little bit sorry for ourselves. It might be a time of triumph when we've just achieved something that is great in our life, and so maybe we have a sense of pride about us. Who knows? But there's all different kinds of situations that he is waiting to attack us. And when he does, it's just like that lion. He goes for the throat. He goes for the death kill. He is deadly. You know, if I was standing up here and this was an African safari, and I was going to be your guide, and I was trying to let you know that, hey, the chances of you running into one of these beasts right here is very, very great. And so let me get your attention, because you're going to need to know this. And if you don't want to listen to this, then your life could be at stake. And you looked across the field and you could see one of these beasts walking, and you think, okay, I'm tuned in, I'm listening. You know, when we're talking about a spiritual war, and that's what we're in, 2 Timothy chapter 4 talks about this spiritual battle that we're in. We don't think about it as being real a lot of times. You know, we don't think about it being real. If there was a lion coming in here that was literally dragging people outside and killing them, then we would take it serious. If there was a terrorist here and he was coming in and he was taking people outside and mowing them down with a machine gun, beheading them, that would be something that we'd take very serious. Satan is destructive, and he works in all different kinds of ways. I want us to look this morning. God, help us to understand our adversary, and certainly he does. He does in many passages. The one I want to look at this morning is Revelation 12 and verse 9. Turn there if you would, please. One simple single verse, but it says so much. In this one verse, Satan, our adversary, is described in many different ways. And they're not just words to be words. They have meaning. And so we're going to look at these different ways in which Satan, our adversary, is described and see a little bit more about our enemy. You know, throughout the centuries, nations and militaries have always tried to understand their enemy. And the reason why is because if we understand our enemy, we know how he's possibly going to attack us. And we also know how we can attack them and overcome them. And so he is our enemy. He is our adversary. We need to better understand how he works. Revelation 12 and verse 9, you see a lot of different things there. Let's read that. It says, "So the great dragon was cast out, that serpent of old called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world." And so he's described there in many different ways. And then it tells what he does. It says he deceives the whole world. Let's look at how he's described. The very first description we see there is that he is a great dragon. A great dragon. When you think about a dragon, this is something, I was looking on the internet for a good picture. I think of something like that. Something that is vicious. Something that is big. Something that is deadly. I got to thinking about this. You know, we all have our opinion. And I could look at something and think that it is huge, think that it is deadly, think that it is great. And Wayne might look at that same thing and say, that's no big deal. You know, when our God says something is great, it's great. He describes him as a great dragon, something very deadly. Is he deity? No. Is he as powerful as God? No, but he's more powerful than you and I. Much more powerful. So we need to be aware of this. But I want you to note the second thing that he describes him as there in this passage. He's described as the serpent of old. Kind of takes you back to Genesis chapter 3. The serpent of old. You know, we think about a great dragon. We think that he might come in and kind of strong arm us. You know, kind of take us by force and do whatever he wants to with us. But he would much rather work in a different way, wouldn't he? Satan would much rather slither his way into a circumstance, into something that's going on into our life to where we don't even realize that he is there and trying to take advantage of us. He would much rather come into our life in a very subtle way, and oh, he's good at it. He would rather come in our life, and sometimes we get in self-pity. Sometimes we have self-denial. Sometimes we have pride. Sometimes it's you could go on and on and list all the things. He comes in a very subtle way. Thinking back about the serpent of old, and here he is at the very end in Revelation describing him, and he says the serpent of old, taking our minds back to the very beginning in Genesis chapter 3. And you think about Eve, and Eve is sitting there, she's there in the garden, and she's talking to this serpent. And we have a hard time trying to understand that, but she doesn't see him as a threat. She doesn't see him as this great dragon, something that would pose a threat and would be a danger. She doesn't see it. She doesn't realize that all of humanity is at stake with what the conversation that she is having at that time. But it is. And she never even saw it coming. He likes to slither his way in. And that's how he works. This is what we think of. And for a lack of better pictures, that's about the best thing I could find. We think of Satan as being something that is terrible. We think of something that is going to be destructive and cause a threat. Brethren, that is not how he works. That's not how he works. He works on each and every one of us, and he works in ways that we like. He looks for our likes and for our comforts, and he takes advantage of that in every possible way that he can. He's kind of like that idea of a bait and a hook, you know? Here you have this bait, and it looks so good to the fish, but what's behind that? There's that hook, and they're caught. Kind of like a bait in a trap, and you're trying to trap an animal, and there's that meat there, and that looks so good to that animal that you're trying to trap, but little do they know that that trap is going to break their leg and going to cause them ultimately to die. That's what he capitalizes on. That's how he works. He makes it look good, and boy, it does look good sometimes. And so he is looked at as being the great dragon. Secondly, he's looked at as being that serpent of old. The third description that we see there is the devil. He's described as the devil, which means to be slanderous and to mock. You know, if Satan is going to talk to God about you, he's going to slander your name. He's going to run your name through the mud. He's going to make you look terrible. Did he not do that to Job? What a righteous man Job was, and what did he make Job look like? He slandered him. He mocked him. He ran his name through the mud. You know, if he's going to talk to us and we want to listen to him, he's going to mock and slander our God. He's going to make our God look like he's not politically correct. He's going to make our God look like he's not very loving and understanding. He's going to make our God look like he doesn't exist. He does it today in the world all about us. He does it right here in the church. And guess what? He works in our families too. He works in our churches even. He's here, and he works on us. And if we're willing to listen to him, he's going to slander our church. He's going to make everything that possibly can be negative about our church. Well, you know, the song leader does not, he sings too many verses, and the preacher's way too long-winded, and sister so-and-so hits that note, and I can't hardly stand to hear her, and why don't we do this program like this, and why do we bother with this? And he's going to bring every single thing that is negative and put it in our face. And he's going to take those things that are not negative, and he's going to make them look like they are negative. Brethren, if he can turn you against your brothers and sisters in Christ, he's won. Sometimes we look at our brethren and we look for the faults, and I know because I do that too sometimes. We all do. And he'll win us over like that. And so that's what he is. He is a slanderer and he is a mocker. A fourth thing that he is called here in this particular verse is Satan. This is the root out of the Aramaic, which means one who lies in wait for an ambush. And that made me think back here in Genesis chapter 4. You've got here Cain and Abel. And they are offering their sacrifices to God. And Abel offered a very pleasing sacrifice to God, but Cain offered one that was not pleasing to God. And notice what he says after this, what God tells him in verse 7. He says, if you do well, will you not be accepted? Question. If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin lies at the door, and its desire is for you. Now, this is Satan personified in the word sin. When he says sin is lying at the door waiting for you, he's talking about Satan. Satan is lying there waiting for you. Now, turn your Bibles over to 1 Peter 5 and verse 8, and let's look at this passage a little bit more closely. Because this takes our mind back to this right here, to the lion, one who prowls about, one who's seeking whom he may devour. There he says, 1 Peter 5:8, be sober, or be of a sober spirit, be vigilant, or be on alert, some translations say. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour. Now, the original language here for devour literally means to gulp down. Now, when you think about the king of the jungle here, what does he do with his prey when he gets it? You ever seen any nature show? Does he toy with it a little bit? Does he play with it a little bit? Does he start feeling a little bit sorry for it? And so I think I'll let this one go and maybe I'll get the next one. I wasn't all that hungry anyway. No, he devours. He gulps down his prey. He takes it out. He kills it. And that's not a very pleasant picture to look at. And so that's what he's looking to do to us in any way that he can. He's looking to devour me. He's looking to gulp me down, to take me out in a spiritual way. And how's he going to do it? He's going to do it like the king of the jungle. He's going to be methodical. He's going to be very crafty and very sneaky. And he's going to find something in my life to get me. It might be a fleshly temptation of mine. It might be my job. It might be a hobby that I just love to do. And so he can slide that in and make that a little bit more important than God. He's got me one. He can do it through my family. He can do it through my church. He can do it in so many different ways. And notice there how personal he makes it. Your adversary. Nobody's safe. Nobody's safe because he makes it very personal. He's after every single one of us. You know, look around you in this auditorium this morning. Just look around you. And I want you to notice, especially the kids and the teenagers, I want you to notice those faces that you've seen since you've been here. I want you to notice the faces that you've seen that have been here year after year and decade after decade. It's not something to take for granted. It's not something to take lightly. Because let me tell you, these are brothers and sisters who have found out how to deal with Satan in their life. Are they perfect? No. Maybe they're not tempted the way I am. Maybe they don't have the different trials in their life. No. No, we all have that. Every single one of us. They've learned to deal with Satan, and they've learned to put their trust and faith in God no matter what's going on in their life. That's not something to take for granted. You think about that. Now think about if every single person that was ever here at the Tanner Church of Christ, every person that was here and walked out the doors and went back into the world, I'm not talking about to another congregation to worship, but who has left the faith. Losing the spiritual battle. They left Jesus Christ. They don't serve Him anymore in their life, and they sure don't worship Him anymore. Think if we had all of them back here in this auditorium. Brethren, there wouldn't be enough room in the back, on the sides, in the foyer, down this aisle, or even outside in the parking lot to fit everybody. Now, why is it that we, when we're talking about something that is physical, and we're talking about maybe a lion that would come in here and literally drag somebody outside and eat them, we can take that and take it seriously. But, brethren, look around you. We might have 110, we might have 120. On a very good Sunday, we might just hit 140. He's working here. He works at every single congregation, and we don't even see it. Can we overcome them? Certainly we can, but we can't do it without Jesus Christ. We can't do it without our own brethren. Something we've got to take very serious. Turn, if you will, to 1 Peter chapter 5, and we're going to look at some ways that God gives us that we can help fight our adversary. He doesn't just describe how terrible he is, but he also gives us some ways that we can use to fight against him. 1 Peter chapter 5, look at starting with verse 6. There he says, humble yourself under God's powerful hand. Now that doesn't look, you know, when we read there in Ephesians chapter 6 and put on the whole armor of God, humility doesn't seem like something that you would prepare to fight anybody, but it is when it comes to a spiritual battle. You know, especially as men, and probably every one of us are kind of like this, but especially us men, we want to take things on ourselves. You know, I'd much rather think that I can handle it myself and I don't need you to help me. Appreciate the offer, but I can handle it just fine. You know, we're just kind of like that. What does he say by humbling ourselves? Where does that put us? Under God's mighty hand. Now, which one's more powerful? My willpower? Me by myself? Or God's hand? I just imagine a huge steel hand there, you know, that nobody can penetrate. When I was a kid, we had a game that we'd play on during recess called freeze tag. Everybody heard of that? And you probably played it different ways, but the way we played it was there was one person that was it, and then everybody else that was not it was running from it. Does that make any sense? The one that's it is trying to tag somebody else so that they're no longer it and that the other person will be it, and you didn't want to be it, okay? One thing could save you, and that was base. You had that one object that you called base. And I can remember this like it was yesterday because some of it was kind of comical. There was all different kinds of kids. And so you had some of your kids that would never get off a base. In fact, they'd hug that thing. You know, they wouldn't even get off of it. And so we had to make a rule. You've got to at least get so many feet from base, you know, because this isn't fair. And then I can remember the kids that, okay, they'll get about 5 or 10 feet away from base. And they would taunt whoever's it, stick their tongue out, you can't get me. And as soon as they turned around, all they'd have to do is jump over there and touch it. I'm safe. You know, it didn't take long for the person that was it to stop fooling with them because, hey, they're right there at base and I'm never going to get them. And they'd start going after somebody else. Then there was the kids that weren't very humble, okay? They were fast and they knew it. And they thought, there's no way he's going to get me. Because I can outrun him. I know I can. And so they'd get as far away from base as they could, and they would taunt and they would tease, and what would happen? Sooner or later, they would get tagged, and they would be it. You know, I think about that because he's talking about this mighty hand. That's God. God, in a sense, is that base. And sometimes we don't have a very humble spirit. You know, I can do this thing on my own, and I'm doing just fine, and I live a good life, and we get further and further away from that base. Then you got that serpent that kind of sneaks in, and he takes advantage. He gets in that certain circumstance, and he hits you maybe when you're a little bit low in your life. Maybe you've lost a loved one. Maybe you're dealing with a sickness. Maybe you're dealing with a great temptation, and he strikes you then. And before you know it, he's got you. That's how he works. Am I under the mighty hand of God? That's a question to ask yourself. Am I under his hand or am I trying to do it myself? Let's look at verse 7. Something else. There in verse 7, he says that we need to cast all our care on him for he cares for us. So not only do I need to be humble under the mighty hand of God, but I need to be carefree. What he means there is free of anxiety and free of worry. You know, we have our pet sins that we kind of flippantly think nothing about. We laugh about gluttony, gossip, several different things, complaining. We don't think anything about those and we kind of laugh about them. This is kind of one of them, you know. I've worried myself sick. You know, I'm going to worry myself to death. And we just kind of, we don't think nothing about that. I tell you what, if he gets you to worry, then he's got you to sin. Because worry is a sin. And what does this say here in Philippians 4 and verse 6? He says, be anxious or worry for nothing, but in everything, bring it to God. How do we do that? By prayer and supplication. And then what are we going to have? The peace that passes all understanding. Now, I personally think that this is a point of spiritual maturity. When you can get to the point to where the things of this world, no matter how bad they are, no matter how horrible they are, I can say, God's in control, and I'm not going to worry about it. I'm the type of person that learns by example. And so I can read it all day long, and I might believe it, but if I see it, then I'll really believe it. And I saw this displayed a couple weeks ago. Standing there, or sitting around in the ICU waiting room with my Gigi, is what we call her, and she's in critical condition. Don't know how bad it's going to be, know that it's bad, and it seems to be getting worse. And I had family members coming in from all over the place, and everyone kind of handles the situation a little bit different and in their own way. But looking at my granddad, and as the days went by and the situation got worse and worse, and finally the news came that she's not going to get better. You know, when I'm the one that is the victim in a sense, what happens? Somebody else usually gives the strength. You know what my granddad did? Everyone around is crying. Everyone is tore up about this. My granddad gathers everyone around to pray and to comfort everyone. And that made a huge impression on me. You know, that spiritual maturity to get to that point in your life to where you can say, hey, I know, I don't, did he like it? No. Did he shed a tear? Yes, you better believe it. Is he worried about it? No. Why? God knows what's best. When I stress and I take all of my cares and my worries to heart instead of giving them to God, he's got me. Because I am too preoccupied to think about my blessings. I'm too preoccupied to try to think about how to deal with the temptation in my life because I've got self-pity going on and I'm worried. He says, give it to the Lord. A third thing, verse 9, he says, resist Satan. Firm in the faith. That word firm is also the word steadfast, maybe in your translation, I think New King James. That means in it for the long run, endurance. Luke has run track this past year for the first time. And he is very good at the 200 and the 400 meter. And did very good in that. But that is where you start at this line and you give it everything you got to this line for a short period, but you give it all you got. And he's very good at that. But Carson has done cross country for the last few years. And that's where you start at this point and you pace yourself. You don't give it all you got, but you pace yourself. And you might run for 3.1 or all the way up to about 6 miles and you pace yourself. You know, that's our Christian life. That's that endurance he's talking about. That is what staying with it and being faithful is about. It's easy to obey the gospel. I'll tell you what's hard. It's hard to be faithful. It's hard to be faithful through all the temptations and the things that Satan throws our way. We've got to stay focused on Jesus Christ. You know, because Satan, if he can get us to focus on anything else, and so often it's me, it's all about me, he's got us. In surveying, before a subdivision is built, oftentimes the subdivision is going to be in an open field. And what we'll do before the subdivision, before we do any of the design work, in order to do the design work, we come in and here's this open field and we've got to make a topographic map of it. And so what we do is we have contour lines. Usually in an open field, it's spaced about 50 feet apart. And that is lines that we would, every 50 feet or so, will take a shot that gives a location and an elevation. All right, in doing this, in an open field, you think it would be very easy to walk across an open field in a straight line. No, not at all. And I'll tell you what's comical is someone that is new at it to come in, and we always, this is kind of funny to watch them do, because, okay, we need to make just straight line down there, go over 50 feet, come straight line back, and every 50 feet, take a shot. They take off across there, and before you know it, they're looking back, trying to see where the... And what's really funny is to see them look back as they're carrying that rod. And by the time they get to the other side of the field, that line looks either like this, or like this, or like this. It's anything but straight. And it doesn't take long to realize that if I want to make a straight line, what do I have to do? I've got to find a point on the other end, whether it be a fence post, a tree, whatever, and I've got to focus on that. Now, between here and there, there might be a ditch, there might be a swamp, there might be a creek that I have to show details on. There might be a lot of hard terrain to go through, but if I stay focused on where I'm walking, that line's going to be straight. I'm going to get there, and the product is going to look good. You know, those of you who are farmers, you know about that in planting a crop as well. You don't look behind you as you're planting, do you? No. I've seen somebody put in a conduit line on a construction site with a ditch witch, and the whole time, and it was hilarious because we knew he was new at it, and the whole time he's looking behind him to make sure he's straight, and that thing went like that. He was all over the place. You know, brethren, here's the point. If Satan can cause us to take our eyes off of heaven and off of Jesus Christ, he's got us. You know, we're at a spiritual battle here. No, we don't see people drug out by their feet by some vicious line. He's here, he's working, and it's real. It's real. Do you believe that? If you believe that, where do you stand here this morning? Honestly, this is not just a sermon that might go a little bit long. This is a warning. God is warning us through His scriptures over and over again, beware, your adversary, he's out to get you and to devour you. Where are you at this morning? Who's got a hold of you? Because it's very plain in God's word that you're one or the other. You're either in God's hands and you're either walking down the straight and narrow or you're in Satan's hands. Where are you at this morning? And the question is, can you be honest with yourself? Because you probably know where you're at. Who's got control of your life this morning? He can get you in any way. Sometimes it doesn't even seem all that bad, but it is, and he will devour you. Who's got you this morning? If you have a need, if you hadn't yet obeyed the gospel, won't you do so this morning? Won't you put your life in his hand? What a wonderful thing it is to have a God that will bear our burdens and to help us through all the difficult situations in our life. It might be that you need to return back to the church, that Satan's come into your life, maybe he slithered his way in and in some way, some form. Won't you come back while together we stand and sing?